The first case on our list is Pittsburgh Mailers v. PG Publishing. Mr. Pass, welcome back. You were here a couple days ago.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I may it please the court. My name is Joseph J. Pass, and I represent the plaintiff.
We can't quite hear you. I know the logistics are challenging.
Any better?
That's better.
Thanks. Okay. I represent the Mailers Local 22, the Typographical Unions Local 7, and the Pressman Local 9, 24-9. In this particular case, it's our appeal with regards to the attempt by these three unions to proceed to arbitration under a contract that had by its term expired, but yet under the theory of Ludens, that was decided by this court, that the arbitration clause survived because there was no particularized renunciation of that particular provision.
Why should we deviate from the previous NPO in this case?
Because I think you're talking about the panel that decided the
right. It's not
case.
This case, yeah, but yeah, you know, the analogous.
Simply because I do believe they made an error. I don't think that was a particularized renunciation of the arbitration provision, and I can't help but.
But it's the same language, right? The same language.
It's the same language. It absolutely is. So that's a non-precedential decision. And as if you read Judge Ranjan's footnote, he too agreed. Obviously, he was compelled to follow the ruling, but he also thought that was not a particularized renunciation of the arbitration.
Well, let me ask you, what was he compelled to follow the ruling? I mean, we say non-presidential for a purpose, but yet if district court judges and attorneys many times in citing these cases refer to them as presidential, I mean, he wasn't really obligated to follow that ruling. He could have followed Ludens. He could have distinguished Ludens and the intervening Supreme Court cases. I understand your colleagues across the way think that Ludens is no longer good law, but he could have actually easily distinguished Ludens from the intervening Supreme Court cases and followed Ludens.
He could have, you're talking about Judge Ranjan, is that what you're speaking of, Your Honor?
Correct.
Yeah, I would agree he could have, but of course I'm not Judge Ranjan, and I think he expressed his dissatisfaction with the decision of the panel. And I think that if you look at the Post-Gazette's position, they sort of believe, I'm sorry, they sort of argue that somehow Ludens conflicts with Litton and with, Knoll, with Knoll Brothers. Actually, it doesn't. Knoll Brothers, if you think about it, I think this court was very insightful in what goes on in the labor-management relations with regards to arbitration. When they came down with Ludens. And why I say that is, under Nold, there was a question of whether or not there was whether or not the contract expired, just as it did here. And both Nold and in Litton both say in their language that just because the contract expires, that does not necessarily mean that the arbitration provision ceases. So they recognize what you folks said in Ludens. That is true. It does not expire. And the way they approached it with Nold was on a case-by-case basis, looked at it in Nold. And in Nold, what they did say is because the severance pay vested under the agreement, that's what the people were entitled to, just because the agreement expired did not necessarily mean that that was not an arbitrable agreement, and they ordered arbitration. On the other hand, in Litton, the question was more of a seniority issue. And the seniority issue said, and the union said, we want to have these people called back or laid off in seniority order. But the seniority provision provided specifically that seniority and other things such as aptitude and ability, and that fluctuates. So that wasn't vested at the time of the contract. It changed it could have changed at the end. In other words, someone might have been qualified to do the job when the contract expired. 3 weeks later or a year later, when they were arbitrating about the recalls, that person may not have had that. So that's why they didn't order arbitration.
Let me ask you this with regard to an express revocation. Let's assume that Ludens is still controlling here and that nothing that happened
yes.
in MG Polymers or CNH made Ludens bad law. If we look at this from the point of view that there's an implied, in fact, contract that continues after the expiration of the collective bargaining agreement, unless something is done to expressly rescind that implied effect contract, why wouldn't the November, I think it's November 17 letter, be that expressive power? And let me look at it this way, not the way the court did in newspaper, the NPO, but the letter said that we are going to continue to comply with the things we legally have to do. Well, that's no commitment at all, because with or without a collective bargaining agreement, they had to continue to do the things they're legally obligated to do. But then it went on to say, we're going to decide our duty to arbitrate on a case-by-case basis. Since the collective bargaining agreement required arbitration in all disputes, why wouldn't the expression that we're going to arbitrate only on a case-by-case basis as we see fit be an express disavowal of the implied, in fact, obligation to arbitrate, just as if they'd said we're not going to arbitrate? I don't see the difference. It's, okay. It's clearly a definite, unmistakable, unambiguous revocation of the duty to arbitrate.
I don't think it is, and if you look at the record in the other cases, Judge Schwartz noted, the Post-Gazette acknowledged that when you read that writing, her specific question was, do you think that can be applied to any grievance going forward based on what you, the Post-Gazette, think you want to arbitrate? And their answer was yes. So that isn't an unequivocal disavowal of arbitration provision.
Well, it is. It is as to the way the arbitration provision is written in the collective bargaining agreement. The collective bargaining agreement says when there is a dispute that's not resolved, it shall go to arbitration.
That's right.
And then management comes in and goes, no, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to only arbitrate cases that we want to arbitrate.
Well, then how?
That's an express revocation of the arbitration clause as written in the initial collective bargaining agreement.
Not really, because they, up above, if you notice what they did write, they said that we will not honor the contractual issues. What are contractual issues? I guarantee you most people don't know what contractual issues. There's only three contractual issues, really, that the board recognizes. One's arbitration, the other is dues checkoff, and the other is union security clause. That's what they're saying. We're not going to honor those. But that changes. For example, 2 years ago, two of those issues, the dues checkoff, and the board had found was a contractual issue. They found that union security was a contractual issue. It was not a contractual issue. It was a mandatory subject that they had to maintain. That was 2 years ago. They changed their mind. That vacillates. That's why I think Luden said that in order to clarify under what was decided in Nold and what was decided in Linton, they wanted to clarify and say it must be a particularized disavowalment of arbitration. And that was not. I
was on the panel in Luden's. I hate to admit it because it somewhat designates how old I am, but
well,
I think that, that, can be,
to too,
that can be obvious by visual observation also. Nevertheless, my feelings aren't going to be hurt if Luden's is overruled.
I don't think Luden's needs to be overruled. I think Luden's is probably one of the best labor management decisions that's come out of this court, frankly, because it makes clear if you want to disavow arbitration, you have to say it. And they did that. If you look at the record, if you look at their letter that they sent to the Teamsters after this all began in January 14th, the record page 200, they specifically say the Post-Gazette disagrees and that they are specifically disavowing arbitration. That's what we're looking for. That's why the Luden says we want a particularized disavowalment. Now, you know what?
How much more particularized could you be then? At that time, all contractual obligations of the current agreement shall expire, and then consistent with Judge McKee's position or suggestion, there's language in it that says we're going to do what we want to do, what the CBA says we're going to do on arbitration.
That's not disavowing arbitration, is it? They're saying we're going to arbitrate, we just don't know what. That's not
arbitrating the contractual provision to arbitrate, and arbitration is totally a creature of contract.
Yes, it is.
And it's clearly inconsistent with the obligation they had under the CBA to arbitrate everything.
Well, but keep in mind, as Luden says, you look at the parties' actions. There was no provision ever proposed in these negotiations or ever that anyone wanted to do away with the arbitration provision. That's what Lyndon talks about. How? What are the parties, not their subjective intent, but their objective intent? We look at what they did. They proceeded, no disavowalment of arbitration was ever submitted in negotiations. So, as Lyndon says, unless there is a disavowing, we assume that they are going to continue with that agreement. That is not necessarily a big burden. It's very simple. You just simply say we're going to arbitrate only those cases that the law requires us to do, period. But they don't say that.
That's none.
Well, no.
What category of case does the law require arbitration in, separate and apart from a contractual obligation?
What Nold said and what Lytton said. The language in Nold and Lytton specify. If there was a breach of the agreement, that
Breach of the agreement. It's still rooted in the contract.
Yes.
Obligation.
But Noel said if the right that someone is complaining about post-contract, after the contract's over, was vested in that individual during the contractual term, they arbitrate it. And that's why Lyndon's is a very good decision. It says, look, if you're going to just disavow, it's a very simple thing. Just disavow it. We're not going to arbitrate, period, unless we are legally required to do that. That's what we, and you know what I think most amazing about this? There's four judges that looked at this. If it is so clear and particularized, why did two disagree? If two judges can't find this to be particularized, how does the man on the floor, the union steward, who doesn't know anything, his education is nowhere near what you folks are. And if you are confused, just imagine how they are confused. That's why Lyndon's is good law, because it wants someone to say specifically, you have to particularly say, I'm not going to be arbitrating grievances unless they are demanded by law. And that's what the law should be. It makes sense.
What's the matter with saying, I'm not going to arbitrate unless I choose to do so?
Unless I refuse. That doesn't do any good, because the law requires them to arbitrate cases such as that we had in Noel, such as we had in arguments like were made in Noel and Lytton.
Yep. Well, the letter says that they're going to continue to fulfill their statutory or their legal obligation.
And had they stopped there, maybe. But even then, that's an ambiguous thing for someone on the floor. But they didn't stop there. They went further and said, we will arbitrate on a case-by-case basis. What does that mean? What does that mean to the shop steward? What does that mean to an ordinary union person? That doesn't mean, they don't know what that means. And
need to know what it means?
Do I know what it means?
Do they need to know what it means?
Absolutely. They're the contracting party. They should know. Absolutely. If they don't know, who they're supposed to know?
I think there are a lot of them need a little education then.
Pardon me?
I think there are a lot of them who need a little further education.
Your Honor, I would have to agree. I've been doing labor business for over half a century, and I can tell you the biggest problem that unions have is the people come off the floor, they have no knowledge, and they're put in positions where they're in charge of these kinds of matters. And I think that's what Lyndon's was trying to address. Frankly, I believe that's exactly right. And that's why it should be particularized. They would understand if it came across and said, we are not going to arbitrate any grievance unless the law requires us to, period. That's the end of it. Instead, they have the wishy-washy language. And that's not what Lyndon's wants.
Thank you. We'll see you on rebuttal.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks. Is it Mr. Hentos?
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning. Brian Hentos on behalf of Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Before I go any further, I want to clear up something that was brought up previously. The Post-Gazette's position is not that Lyndon's is somehow in conflict with the Nolte decision. Our position is that it's in conflict with Tackett and Reese and other decisions by this court, because in Tackett and Reese, they stated, collective bargaining agreements do not survive contract expiration without the party's express written consent. Lyndon's, in contrast, says an implied in fact contract will survive unless you clearly disavow. That's our position on that.
But you know, Tackett and Reese, and I think the district court here was kind of leaning toward that position, but Tackett and Reese dealt with obligations in the collective bargaining agreement that required payment of benefits. That's very different than an arbitration situation. I can see a situation where you would not want to burden an employer with continuing to pay benefits after the end of a collective bargaining agreement. The employer may not be in any financial position to do that, which may in fact be why the collective bargaining agreement was allowed to expire. But arbitration is different. That does not require the employer paying out any funds whatsoever out of their treasuries. I'm just not sure that Tackett and Reese have the kind of breadth that on their face is ascribed to them.
Your Honor, a couple issues. At one, I think Tackett and Reese, they did not limit themselves to the retiree benefits that were at issue in that case. And I'd call your attention to two cases that came out of the Third Circuit, the Knitterhaus case, and more importantly, the Penn Jersey case. In Penn Jersey, they noted that Tackett applies regardless of the provision at issue. So I think it's a little broader. However, I don't want to get too bogged down in this today, because whether or not the court believes Luden should be overturned or not, the Post-Gazette still wins. And they still win because of the same reasoning that was done in the PG publishing decision from last year. In addition, I think it would be
Why don't you address Judge Schwartz's footnote, as well as the district court's reluctance to buy into that logic?
A couple issues there, Your Honor, and I think it'd be really helpful for us just to look at the letter. So the letter, the Post-Gazette just didn't write this letter out of the blue. It was designed to address three specific legal issues, and it had the direct purpose of satisfying specific labor law requirements. The first part of the paragraph is designed to address any type of statutory or any type of contractual terms. It states the current agreement expires on March 2017. At that time, all contractual obligations of the current CBA shall expire. This statement was included specifically to disavow a Luden's contract. And Luden's...
But the problem is, though, and I do want to finish your answer, the problem is that they went on to say that some of the contractual obligations we will continue to abide by, i.e. we'll arbitrate what we want to arbitrate. But that duty of arbitration, as I mentioned to Mr. Pass, that is strictly a contractual obligation. So they're saying that the terms of the contract cease to bind us, but we're going to be bound by some of those provisions. We're just going to pick and choose the cases in which we're going to be bound by those provisions. That's problematic to me. And the Penn Jersey case that you mentioned, again, it's a non-presidential opinion, NPO. So that does not help you in terms of the continued viability of Luden's.
Your Honor, let me address the case-by-case issue. So the language case-by-case, that was designed to establish, to satisfy two statutory requirements that we have. First, Indiana and Michigan Electric, which requires employers to process post-contract expiration grievances up until arbitration. You're not required to arbitrate. Now, Litton says there are some post-contract expiration grievances that must be arbitrated. If you look at the dissent in Litton, they use the exact phrase case-by-case basis in saying, look, under the majority opinion, going forward, an employer will need to analyze post-contract grievances on a case-by-case basis. The Post-Gazette takes that directly from Litton to establish, look, we're going to comply with Litton. We're going to take the exact words they used. And in addition, I believe the court kind of hit on it.
Well, I don't want to interrupt you, but I feel obligated to lose my train of thought at that point in my life. That would be fine if the first phrase wasn't there saying we're going to continue to abide by those contractual obligations that we're legally obligated to abide by, which to me is like saying it's a windy day when the wind blows. They have to abide by those provisions anyhow. So I don't know why they're saying that we're going to go ahead and comply with them. But they did say that. So to me, that really undercuts your argument, because if they had to abide by the certain arbitrational obligations because of Supreme Court law like Litton saying you've got to arbitrate these, that's covered when they say we're going to continue to do what the law requires. They then go further and say, but as to contractual obligations, we'll do that when we pick and choose and think we should.
Your Honor, I'd submit that it was included in there to tell them, look, we're going to comply with Litton and Indiana and Michigan Electric. However, the key issue also with that statement, when it says, look, the Post-Gazette will determine its obligation to arbitrate, that's taking something that was mandatory during the term of the contract and saying, look, going forward, it's going to be voluntary. The Post-Gazette will decide its obligation to arbitrate cases in the future. Now, that in of itself, The prior panel decision in PG Publishing, they noted with respect to that, that this standing alone was enough to demonstrate, look, the contract as it had existed before, it's over. It's not going forward that way. The Post-Gazette is taking over and making the unilateral or voluntary decision as to whether or not something would be arbitrated. And earlier, the panel had asked what I thought of or my interpretation with respect to Judge Ranjan's footnote, and a couple issues, I think, there. First, as I just mentioned, the key, and mentioned by the earlier panel, we took something that was mandatory and we made it voluntary. Second, the court had mentioned, look, you could have said it in a clearer way. You could have said we're only going to arbitrate those things arising under the expired agreement. That does not actually comply with Indiana and Michigan, and it probably doesn't comply with Litton either. Both of those cases say, look, post-contract, you got to take a look, analyze the grievance, determine whether or not somehow it does fall under Litton. By saying, look, we're only going to do what the law requires, it gets awfully close to a wholesale disavowal, which would run directly afoul of Indiana and Michigan Electric.
What do you make of Mr. Pass's argument, his last argument, that it's anything but a clear revocation, and that two of the four judges that have looked at this came to different conclusions?
Respectfully, I would disagree. I think if you go back, really, this case, we win under Ludens with the first paragraph of the letter, where it says, the current agreement expires on March 31, 2017. At that time, all contractual obligations of the CBA shall expire. There's only one way to read that, Judge, and that's exactly what the panel said. Look, it is clear, based on that language, that the contract is done. You really need not get any further than that.
Why did the letter include the second paragraph?
That's to address, so really what the letter does is first we extinguish the contractual obligations.
Right. Contract's gone.
The contract's done. Then we want to address our statutory obligations. Going forward, we will do what we're required to do, maintain the status quo ante. That's what the first paragraph.
Do you really need to say that?
I believe
you're going to do what you had to do?
I believe you have to, Your Honor, so this is somewhat of an unusual issue. I think there's a very good example in the record. If you look at the letter that was sent to the Pressman Union when they demanded arbitration, it goes through what a Litton analysis is. And I think in a lot of ways, some of these concepts are somewhat foreign to folks. But at the conclusion of a labor contract, the employer has duties. Their duties are maintain the status quo ante, and then, as I said, process some grievances. You don't have to arbitrate them unless it falls under Litton. If you take a look at the letter in the record, it kind of lays all that stuff out for you. But I think the language needed to be in there to demonstrate to the union, look, we understand what our statutory duties are. We're going to comply with them. And that's why it was included.
But they would have had to comply with them whether they put that in or not.
You're correct on that, Judge, yes. It was simply a notification to them that we're aware of our duties and we're going to comply with them. I have nothing further.
President Key?
I have nothing further. Before I forget, though, could we at the end of this order a transcript?
Yeah, we'll do that.
Okay, thanks.
Judge Roth, any other questions?
No further.
Thank you very much.
Your Honors, I think we have to look at what the language of Ludens is. My opponent here emphasized that the contract was they gave notice that the contract was terminated. Here's what Litton said. An arbitration clause may survive at the expiration of a termination of the CBA intact insofar as a term of the new implied in CBA unless, one, both parties in fact intend the term not to survive, two, under the totality of the circumstances, either party of the lapsed objectively of the lapsed CBA objectively manifest to the other a particularized intent, be it expressed verbally or non-verbally, to disavow and repudiate the arbitration. This result injects more stability and certainty in the labor law and promotes the primary statutory objectives of peaceful and stable labor relations underpinning the LMRA at a slight cost of a notice requirement forcing a party to make clear its wish to no longer abide by the arbitration clause. This court opined specifically in circumstances like in Luden, where neither party in any palpable way challenged the continued vitality of the arbitration provision in particular, as opposed to the CBA as a whole, before the dispute erupted and where no evidence showed that both parties in fact intended their obligation to arbitrate grievances be discharged, we think the party's duty to arbitrate grievances according to the terms of the CBA was never totally discharged. In other words, Luden's general undifferentiated termination of the CBA effective July 1992, merely transmuted the party's duty to arbitrate into the term of an implied CBA. So the fact that they canceled the contract does not necessarily mean they're going to cancel the arbitration. And that is consistent with both Nold as well as Litton.
In addition, aren't they saying they're going to cancel the arbitration as it existed in the contract? That's what they're saying here.
Yes.
Right? Isn't that a de facto termination of the arbitration? I mean, in that last sentence, with respect to arbitration, the company will decide its obligations to arbitrate grievances on a case-by-case basis. That's a repudiation of the contract, because that's not what the contract says.
Well, it's a repudiation of the contract, but that's not enough. That's what Luden says. There has to be a particular opposition. It says the vitality of the arbitration provision in particular, as opposed to the CBA as a whole. In other words, you can oppose the CBA as a whole, but you have not necessarily said you will not arbitrate grievances. That's what Luden says. Because of the favored place that arbitration has in our judicial system with regards to labor management disputes. I also would point out, if you look at the record, record page 50, they did give, when they dealt with the Pressman, they said specifically, and this is in January of 2019, with the Pressman only, an arbitration clause does not generally continue in effect after the collective bargaining agreement expires. Moreover, the company has disavowed any obligation to arbitrate post-expiration grievances. That's what they're telling the Pressman. No other letter with regard to the mailers or the typos similarly says that. None.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to all counsel. We will take this case.